You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and first of all, I want to kick things off this week by thanking some of my listeners who joined us at Hammerfest, including also party comrades who were able to be there. But to some of my listeners who came to Hammerfest this weekend, it was great to be able to see you, and thank you always, as always, for tuning in and telling me that you tuned in, and that means a lot. It really motivates me and everything that I do. So that was great. And for anyone who was curious, Hammerfest went excellent. I had the honor to be able to address the crowd, got to meet comrades from Germany, from the Netherlands, from Latin America, and of course from all over America. Had an amazing time. And several of our Sacramento Spartans were there at the events. So got to be able to spend some time with them as well. So great times. Half a dozen white nationalist organizations were there, and everybody got along. Everyone had a great time. There was just this spirit of unity. That's the subject I talked about for the event, and it was really on display. So great time, and looking forward to more events like that in the future. On the line with me today, as always on Mondays, is Dr. Matthew Johnson. So Dr. Johnson, first of all, how are you doing? Second of all, how much closer have we gotten to midnight this past week?
Well, you know, I'm doing okay, I guess. It was my pleasure to cover for you last week a few times. I've always think that you're doing a daily show is a big deal. Very few people are actually doing it, especially for free, in the movement anyway. Midnight. The cowardly attack of the U.S. Air Force against the SAA. What was that now? Last week, 2 weeks, killing almost 100 soldiers. You know, it's cowardly because they had no idea they were coming under attack. And they're the good guys. That's proof positive that what I've been saying since day one, ISIS is a creation of the West, is a Hollywood image. And it is very, very close to what has been implicit for a long time, and that is a declaration of war against Russia. John Kerry couldn't be more blatant about it. Hillary Clinton couldn't be more blatant about it, that they will do anything to declare war on Russia, which automatically means a war on China. This is suicidal. And, you know...
I want to mention that, of course, the U.S. claimed that it was an accident. I don't know how you make an accident that big. When the Syrian Arab Army, being a professional army, of course, has everything marked, and they're pretty identifiable as not being the Islamic State. But do you just want to talk just a little bit, Dr. Johnson, about the America's lies, saying one thing out of the corner of one mouth, you know, side of their mouth, and then doing the exact opposite? And that seems to be, you know, we are not at war with the Assad regime. We are not at war with the Assad regime. We're there to fight the Islamic State. Could you talk about the fact that it's actually violating international law that America is there in the first place because we weren't invited?
Well, you know, international law arguments never impress me. You know, international law is imposed by, you know, the victors, the most powerful governments in the world. That's never really bothered me. Plus the fact there's really no way to enforce it. The international system is still based on self-interest. And today, at least from the West, the self-interest of Western multinationals and banks. Now, as far as it being an accident is concerned, you know, given the size of the American military budget, given the sophistication of how the Air Force functions, especially in that part of the world, the U.S. has been there for so long, so close to Israel, it can't be an accident. I mean, those kind of things simply don't happen anymore, given the nature of the electronics and the radar and everything else that they have, the targeting systems. There's no conceivable way that that was an accident. Plus the fact that Assad himself, as well as the Russians, said that that attack was more than an hour. Like the USS Liberty, you know, the Liberty was continuously sending communications. You're hitting the wrong people. This is the American ship, etc. the Syrians were doing the same thing. So there's no way that can conceivably be an accident. So the two issues, when you mention the lies and the doublespeak, two things come to mind. Number one, the ISIS thing. The U.S. has condemned any attack on that movement. All their equipment is American. They've been defended. Al-Qaeda is now an ally of the U.S. Officially, which you know, is an admission that they didn't do 9/11. There's no way that could happen. And people, journalists and everything are still saying that the U.S. is at war with ISIS. That can't possibly be. And the second thing that comes to mind is the president of the Philippines, who, having wiped out the drug trade, is under siege from the U.S. to the point now where he has pretty much officially declared for China and is now building the possibly even be a part of the SCO soon. So in both cases, you have this declaration of war, one on ISIS, the other on drugs. And yet anyone who actually does anything or is remotely successful is immediately condemned. So the only rational conclusion is that the U.S. is not at war with ISIS. It is ISIS. And the U.S. is making so much money. The elite, especially Wall Street, is making so much money from the drug trade. There is no way there could be a serious war on drugs. So, it's at a point now where the average normie American, you can't even talk to them. You know, we're not even using the same vocabulary. Everything they know is wrong. And how do you communicate with a person like that?
Well, and, you know, something that I thought was interesting that Obama, of course, vetoed the bill that was put forward with surprising bipartisan support to allow for lawsuits against Saudi Arabia. And, of course, that was actually overridden for the first time because there's been so much pressure on Saudi Arabia after the documents were released from the CIA implicating Saudi Arabia in 9/11. The idea that there are state actors at play, and of course where Saudi Arabia is at work, Israel is at work, they're of course aligned in the Middle East, and anywhere there's radical Islamic extremism, it always ties back in some form to Saudi Arabia, because Wahhabism is the religion of Saudi Arabia. That's the official state religion. And every terror organization, pretty much, in the Islamic world, of course, there are exceptions, but the vast majority are Wahhabis, because it's this specific, really violence-oriented form of jihad that they call for. Boko Haram is Wahhabi, Al-Qaeda is Wahhabi, the Islamic State is Wahhabi, the Salafists as well. And then, of course, that ties in then back to Israel and back to America, that we're huge allies of Saudi Arabia in the Middle East. We're huge allies of Israel. And yet somehow every Islamic terror organization is tied up with us. But the groups that we declare terrorist organizations, like Hezbollah, are the ones who fight these radical Islamic extremists. So it's very clear the lies of the system. Do you want to talk about, I want to know your thoughts real quick, on this current bill that was then put, vetoed and then overridden with a veto to be able to sue Saudi Arabia for their role, because the majority of the 9/11 hijackers were Saudis. The evidence is very clear that's been made public that the Saudi regime was involved and has been involved in global terrorism. And of course, they're kind of the lapdog of Israel in the Middle East. So what's your takeaway on that?
Very simply, that it's meaningless. Such a lawsuit can never be enforced, regardless of who wins and who loses. And plus, I really question if the U.S. would allow, and a lawsuit like that would demand tremendous detail. In terms of anyone who's offering testimony as to the mechanics of that 9/11 attack. And that is something the U.S. government does not want out. That probably motivated the veto more than anything else. But even if they were successful, the Saudi government simply could give them the middle finger. What's going to happen? It's not like they're American citizens who could actually be given real sanctions. There, nothing could be done to them. So it really was a meaningless, more symbolic exercise than anything else. But the veto is driven by that. The details that would come out would be so damaging, it could never happen.
Well, right. I mean, because, of course, America has its hands in everyone's cookie jar, being involved in all of this. But I think it does set an interesting precedent that Obama had to veto it. And even if we know it probably won't go anywhere, that what this means, that basically admitting that it was one of our allies, not our supposed enemies, that hit us that really changes the game. And I was just reading just yesterday, it was coming out in a majority of news outlets, that the United States government spent $540 million in the early 2000s on creating fake Al-Qaeda propaganda. And what they said is their purpose was to find out people who clicked on it in the Middle East and use that to track them. But if we're, and also to use this to release to Arab news outlets to see who was sharing it, things like that. But the United States government has now had to admit they spent $500 million on fake Al-Qaeda propaganda. I mean, what do you think on that? On the idea that they literally are crafting enemy propaganda and releasing that into the world that then could be used by young Muslims to radicalize them and call them to violent jihad against the West. I mean, it just seems so clear. It's just so transparent at this point how just obscenely corrupt our government is, and the fact that every enemy, like you mentioned, that they tell us we're fighting, we end up to be bankrolling. I mean, so what do you think on that?
A few things come to mind. Number one, on a personal note, it's very, very frustrating because people like me, Paul Craig Roberts, a lot of guys like that, we've been saying this from day one. And we sacrificed a lot. We've suffered a lot for saying that. We've been called every name in the book. And now we're proven right again. And with very little, you know, very little impact. The second thing that comes to mind is that the damage has been done. This doesn't seem to change. I mean, I'm still seeing headlines in the papers referring to Al-Qaeda or ISIS as an enemy, and that there is a war, the United States military on these groups. So it clearly hasn't penetrated. It's the damage has been done. Let me put it to you like this. For the average American, the average normie American, even your typical conservative or liberal normie, looking at this, they would have to reconfigure their mental life so radically to accommodate these facts that you know only a handful are going to be able to do it. So the ultimate frustration is I don't think these revelations are going to mean much. Even though it proves that we're right, it proves that 9/11 was fake. It was a lie from the war that was subsequent to 9/11 was all a lie, et cetera, et cetera. The U.S. support for the heroin trade out of Afghanistan, which brings the drug question in the Philippines to the front. All of these things, it's all true. We've been saying it from day one. Now you have mainstream politicians now realizing it's safe to say those things will come out and say like this is a revelation that they came up with. But because how radical people are going to have to reconfigure their mental state to take all of this in, they won't do it. They would much rather suffer with the dissonance than become so radicalized. You have no choice but to become radicalized upon hearing these facts. They simply won't do it. So the impact, I think, will be minimal, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, the Edward Snowden leaks, the fact that they're listening to every one of our phone calls. They're collecting metadata, absolutely of obscene levels on every American citizen. It isn't even just us political dissidents. The fact that that's got no traction, everyone yawned and went back to sleep. The fact that there are no WMDs in Iraq and, we're there and over a million Iraqis have died. Thousands of American soldiers have died. We yawn and go back to sleep. What's it going to take to awaken the American people? I mean, it's such a cliched thing. We've been asking this a long time, but I mean, Dr. Johnson, I'm just truly stupefied sometimes. We live in an Orwellian police state by their own admission now. We go to war on lies to be able to maintain the military-industrial complex. Everything the United States government does is underhanded and promotes the international Jewish interests. All that I see in front of me is George Orwell's 1984, from the surveillance state to the continuous war, to, as we've, of course, Hillary Clinton loves offing political dissidents, to literally destroying our history, as we see with the destruction of Confederate memorials, creating unpersons out of our own history. What is it going to take to awaken the American people to the fact that we do seem to live in George Orwell's worst nightmare?
Well, two things, and the two things are actually related. The first thing, total economic collapse, which, as you know, is not far off. I mean, mathematically speaking, it can't be that far off. When the distribution system breaks down, when the money is worthless, so many Americans define everything, their worth, everyone's worth, according to a dollar figure. When that's no longer meaningful, they'll have no choice. that will radicalize everyone. I mean, middle class, upper middle class people will be failing. They'll have no choice. They either have to kill themselves or become one of us. They'll have no options. And the second thing, and it's actually related, would be a war with Russia and China and really the rest of the world, which the U.S. will lose. Any American soldier has no idea what he's fighting for. There's no morale there. You've seen all the pictures of these guys. I don't know if you've read the desertion rate since 2006 has been over 30,000 Americans have deserted their posts since 06. The U.S. has not seen that since the Civil War. That's an extremely important news item that I posted, but very few people are even aware of. A lost war, historically, can destroy an entire system. It will lose all legitimacy. There's nothing like a lost war, or on the other hand, a won war, to boost the legitimacy or destroy the legitimacy of the system. And of course, a lost war will collapse the economy. So one of those two things, or both, is absolutely necessary. There's kind of a third thing, possibly, and that is if the Black Lives Matter, these kind of groups, really do take to the streets if Donald Trump wins, as they say they're going to, and create chaos in every major city. That will force people to be radicalized. But the first two really are absolute, certainties. That's what has to happen.
Well, actually bringing up Donald Trump is a great segue into my next question. What do you think of the most recent debate and where things are standing currently in the polls? Because I seem to see two very clear narratives that Hillary Clinton is a career politician. She's a liar. She's led Americans to die. She's promoted war across the globe. Everything she touches has turned to an absolute quagmire, and I don't think that's by accident. And Donald Trump called a girl fat. And that seems to be the breakdown within the media, and apparently those two things are equal with which one should be president. So where do you think the election stands right now, and what do you think the chances are for each candidate?
Well, despite the fact I don't have much of a life, I still wasn't going to get dumber by watching the debate. I honestly don't care about that. I haven't watched a debate actually ever in my life, just like I've never voted. Those are highly scripted. They're meaningless. The only thing I have seen is some of the evidence that Hillary was signaling that odd looking moderator. That's the only thing that I've seen. Hillary, in every poll I've seen, Donald Trump is winning by 1 or 2 percentage points. Now, here's my problem. Hillary Clinton has had a handful of rallies very poorly attended. I don't know what a Hillary Clinton lawn sign looks like. I've never seen one. I don't know what it looks like. It could be anything. She has minimal support even among Democrats. I mean, Democrats wanted Joe Biden. They certainly wanted Bernie. Anyone but her. She's an embarrassment. There is no fire in the Democratic side at all. The polls have to be rigged. If she wins, and I have the feeling she might, it will be because of a rigged election. The problem is, I think the system is aware that if they kill Donald Trump, if they rig the election, our people will do very little. Unlike the other side, if they black rioting, Hispanic rioting, gang violence, that's all the time. But our people don't have that tendency. I think they would feel safe in getting rid of Donald, pretty secure that we're not going to, take over City Hall. It's conceivable, but I would be shocked if that were the case. I know they found a lot of fake ballots in Ohio, explaining why she hasn't been, a whole warehouse full, actually, explaining why she hasn't been campaigning in Ohio. There's no doubt. I mean, it was certainly not the first time an election has been stolen. But I think Donald underpolls, just like I remember reading about David Duke. I mean, David Duke's polling is always, add 20 points to it, because people are so scared they won't admit it, even to a pollster. But clearly, Hillary Clinton, the few rallies she's had, have been very poorly attended. Where is this support? How is she just barely losing to Donald Trump? Donald Trump has been selling out stadiums wherever he goes. So it has to be rigged. The lie, they will do anything. They'll make up whatever they need to destroy Donald Trump, and certainly up to and including killing him. The problem is, I don't think they're going to get much flack for it.
Well, I mean, that goes into the idea that there's a, you know, our people need to wake up. But, you know, with Donald Trump, with Hillary Clinton, and what we're seeing, I mean, it is funny. I, of course, was I went to Hammerfest this weekend. I drove to Georgia, through Tennessee, through Kentucky, through Georgia, and I didn't see a single Hillary sign, and that's the God's honest truth. And, of course, you know, we all know about the Solid South, but, I mean, not a single one. I saw one Hillary bumper sticker. I will admit that. I saw one bumper sticker. I saw 0 yard signs, 0 billboards, and everything was Trump country. And that was kind of an amazing thing to be able to see. So, I mean, I'm sure within the city, with the black vote, of course, is going for Hillary. But there definitely seems that lack of excitement, like you mentioned, that really no one is excited about Hillary, but they just hate Donald Trump. They think Donald Trump is going to institute pogroms on day one, which... You know, oh, that would be amazing, but it's not going to happen. So where do you think the, you know, as the election is progressing, and you gave us some of your insight, but, you know, Election Day rolls around. Do you think the system might lose legitimacy like it has in Austria if it's found out that there is vote tampering? Of course, there's a lot less accountability in our system with our elections. But do you think there's a possibility that if the system gets caught trying to rig things for Hillary, that they would really have a credibility crisis and get exposed?
That's a good question. I'm thinking of Al Gore in that election where, you know, he claimed that the election was stolen from him. But at the same time, American overseas military votes were never counted. So that didn't mean much. 1960, it was blatantly obvious that the election was stolen from Richard Nixon, but Nixon, it didn't feel like, you know, causing a crisis, and he just conceded, getting his revenge later on. Given the climate, it's very possible, except again, our people are not exactly known for, you know, taking over City Hall. And that's the thing. Now, the biggest enemy, the biggest nightmare the system has right now is that middle-class whites have had enough and become violent. Then it's over. Then the party is over. There is no way the system can recover from that. So keeping middle-class people docile, and they have to be. They have children and jobs, and they have to worry about a lot of things, is essential. So, you know, the word, the Greek word is aboulia. It's not just lethargy, but it's a lethargy that comes from feeling that it just doesn't matter. That whatever you do, you know you're being lied to, but you don't think anyone else is going to help you, so you just kind of sink into this depression. And it's a word that I'm using all the time now, one that Michael Hoffman started using some years ago to refer to the average white American. It was so difficult for someone to declare for us with a job and with children, because you know what happens. You could lose your job. You know, you could lose your standing in society. Now, if everyone does it, it's another matter. But that's the prisoner's dilemma. It you know, it's really hard to just assume that people are going to join you. The chances are they won't. So if there is massive, and there will be massive vote tampering, and the fact is, you know, I've been saying from day one that the threats of violence against Trump supporters from the beginning of this campaign have invalidated this election anyway. I would not be surprised, if, especially given the fact that Homeland Security is controlling these elections from the security point of view, that they say that the elections are invalid because Trump supporters have been intimidating people at the polls. That would not shock me. And so they could cancel the election and have it next year or something like that. It may not happen, but that's something that wouldn't shock me at all. But from a Trump supporter's point of view, it is not legal in this country to intimidate anybody, let alone the Republican nominee and his supporters during an election cycle. It's a felony. You can't do it. And yet it's happening every day on camera. So from the U.S.'s own point of view, the way it judges elections abroad, this election is long since invalid. You can't do that to Trump supporters, and yet it's been done without any sanctions put on anybody. Even Bernie Sanders came out and said, you can't do that to someone. Bernie had the courage to say you can't intimidate the supporters of a nominee for president. You can't do that. It's people don't realize just how illegal that is. It's a felony in this country to intimidate someone who is just exercising their rights in electoral kind of a way. It's a felony, 10 years minimum for that. So, but nothing has been done. So already you have a lack of legitimacy. Already you have fraud. And generally speaking, if you know, you search for this on Google, and it will come up over and over again, Trump supporters violent towards Hillary supporters. The Trump supporters threaten death to someone, rather than the other way around, which we know exactly is what's going on. So I think Abulia will take over. I don't think there'll be a lot of fallout. I hate to say it.
Well, I mean, if there isn't, it's the sort of thing that this is part of the process. I mean, Julius Evola, of course, said, we have to ride the tiger of modernity. And that's kind of what all of us are doing. You know, we're active in building the world that we want, to building our movement. But at the same time, there are factors beyond our control where we are riding the tiger, you know, and the tiger eventually will get tired and keel over and die. I mean, that's modernity. It's not based in anything organic. It's all artificial. And it's going to, you know, all come to an end. So as we're coming to the end of our show, kind of a side note, kind of a question I thought was kind of an interesting thing to talk about. Kim Kardashian was just came out a few hours ago, was robbed in Paris of $10 million. And I thought, by golly, $10 million. How many suitcases of money did she have? How many gold bricks? And apparently, it was the jewelry that she was wearing, or the side jewelry that she had within her bag. So this is kind of a question that isn't really about Kim Kardashian, but Dr. Johnson, first of all, someone would have no ability, I think, really, truly, and honestly, to be able to tell the difference between a few $1,000 ring and a $5 million ring. I mean, it seems all artificial. So when it comes to wealth, of these displays of wealth, of our elites, of our rich, is it all status signaling? Are they signaling to each other? Are they signaling to us that they just have this money to burn? But what, what's going on? You know, when you look at diamonds, you create a diamond in a lab that is the exact same thing as a diamond you dig out of the ground, having some child soldier in the Congo do. Can't tell the difference, but one is 50 times more expensive than the other. It's just absolutely asinine. So, when it comes to our rich and these displays of wealth, why do our rich do this so much, you know, and what symbol does this set for our society, as, of course, wages are down, income inequality is up, and your average family can barely keep the lights on, and we've got people walking around with $10 million worth of jewelry on their person?
Western society has never seen this in terms of inequality. Where the top 80 families control the overwhelming majority of the wealth, not just in America but in the Western world. I have not read this story. This may have been an inside job. I was under the impression that someone like her would have security with her at all times, and therefore this really couldn't happen. Was she wandering by herself in Paris?
She was in. She was in her hotel room, and it said that she was. She was tied up and held at gunpoint. So that does seem a little odd. That does seem a little bit like a Hollywood production. But, for the benefit of the doubt, I will say that happened. But the idea of traveling with $10 million, that just that alone stupefies me for the average experience of white Americans that we experience every day, who would never see $1 million, even $100,000 in one place, you know. Heck, I don't think I've ever even seen $10,000 in one place. But these people can walk around with $10 million worth of stuff. It's kind of an absurd difference between that is income inequality.
Oh, it's outrageous. But that also translates into the fact that the culture, the anti-culture now, believes that someone's worth is based on precisely that. Success in career has nothing to do with making a difference or being satisfied, but making money, no matter what you're doing. Money automatically confers class and intelligence and wisdom and insight. I'm happy that the Kardashians are so notorious, such notorious airheads, that clearly that's been blown out of the water. Now, in her particular case, she probably isn't even aware. You know, she's born and raised with this. This is a normal day-to-day thing for her. She's not even aware that this is abnormal. That social circle of hers, you know, can't possibly be very insightful into things. But when you consider that everything is based on money and power is based on it, which comes from the Renaissance, which comes from the Medici family taking over Florence and completely revamping how human beings view each other. That means all power is in the hands of a handful of families who, through their activities, through the Bilderberg or trilaterals or whatever, are on the liberal side of the spectrum. That alone explains everything. That by itself explains, you know, why we're in the position that we are and why Apulia has taken over so many people. But as far as the, you know, Kim is concerned, you know, she probably isn't even aware that she's a target or even has even thought about it. But the whole thing seems odd because that she would be alone at any given time or not observed at any given time, given who she is, the threat of her being kidnapped and held for ransom. It's got to be an inside job.
Well, it's these elites think they're above the law, which in many cases they are, and they're above reality. But as the ringing of revolution comes forward, they and the soft middle class, I think, are going to hit an interesting wall. but Dr. Johnson, lots of interesting stuff going on, as always, ticking closer and closer to the end of this evil empire. It's amazing, as always, to be able to have you with me. My dear listeners, great to be back for another week of The Daily Traditionalist, and I'm going to be here tomorrow for another show. So looking forward to being here. Dr. Johnson, thank you so much. And comrades, hail victory!
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.